With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh my goodness me! What a fantastic goal! What a goal! That is absolutely superb!
Huge cheers go up around Emirates Stadium.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Weekly Podcast for the week of the 26th of September 2017. I'm your host, Russell Hargreaves. Coming up on today's show, Ainsley Maitland-Niles talks about becoming a World Cup winner. We learn about the Invincibles in this week's A to Z of Arsenal. Adrian Clarke is back for the chalkboard with a very exciting personal development to tell us about as well. But we kick off by looking back at Monday night's visit of West Bromwich Albion with the Arsenal insider.
Let's hear from another Arsenal insider on the Arsenal Weekly Podcast.
Well, I'm here with former Arsenal midfielder Martin Hayes. And Martin, we've just been commentating for Arsenal Media on that 2-0 victory against West Brom. The crowd is clearing its way out of Emirates and it's three more points in the bag. What did you make of Arsenal's performance, first of all?
Well, I mean, no, it's important we get the points and get back up amongst the top four or five. First half, probably didn't defend very well at times. We got unusual to see us get opened up that much, but as the game went on, we got better and better and West Brom really struggled. And, you know, in the end, worthy winners. Nice to see a clean sheet. A lot of positives in the end.
Two goals from Alexandre Lacazette, getting the job done for the home team. Here's a quick reminder of that brace from the Frenchman.
Alexis Sanchez over the wall. Oh, terrific stop, and then followed in by Alex Lacazette from close range. And the Frenchman has done it once again. He scored in a third consecutive home Premier League clash, the first man to do so since Brian Marwood in the late 80s. Johnny on the spot, that's what we bought him for.
Well, Ben Foster hasn't saved a penalty since January 2015. He's up against Alex Lacazette here. And Lacazette, for his second and Arsenal's second, finds the corner, clinically dispatched. The Gunners have got a bit of breathing space here. Mistake from Neon. And Arsenal have punished the baggies here. It is Arsenal 2, West Bromwich Albion 0.
Two nice strikers' goals and a nice little record in there too. First player since 1988 to score three home consecutive goals since signing. That's a cracking little accolade.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's nice. It's nice when you join a club to be able to, you know, get on as a striker, get on the score sheet early. You know, it takes away the pressure. You know, it's a big move, big, you know, a lot of money move to the club. And, you know, I think the fans see the quality that he's got. You know, and it's going to give him loads of confidence, which is good for us going forward.
And he's the kind of player who is obviously a proven finisher, and we're seeing it already in the Premier League. And I think we felt he would adapt well to this kind of pace and this kind of physicality.
Well, yeah, you know, and also, you know, you're at Arsenal. We can create lots of chances and, you know, we haven't had a penalty box striker in a while. And
Ian Wright kind of feel, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and you know, if he's going to get himself into those areas, he will score a lot of goals for us. And, you know, it's nice. He ain't always involved in the build-up, but he's there any little night. The first goal was a poacher's goal. You know, his second goal, good penalty, done what he had to do. But as you say, he's the icing on the cake. All the other lads are creating, but he's there to put it in.
So a good all-round team performance on the whole. We'll talk about one or two of the slight concerns in a moment. But first of all, let's get the boss's take. Arsene Wenger speaking to us post-match.
First half was quite even and West Brom played very well. They were very physical, very well organised, as usually they are. And overall, we're lacking one special circumstances maybe. But overall, we won it up at half-time. In the second half, it was we controlled well the game and overall... I think we deserve to win.
And finally, that's five unbeaten now, starting to build some momentum.
Yes, and overall, I believe, as you see, that we are much more stable defensively. You know, at the start of the season, we conceded too many goals. And you have no hope if you concede always goals. And overall, on that front, we stabilised very well.
Arsene Wenger happy to be climbing the table once again. There were some concerning moments in the first half, though, weren't there, where Arsenal were kind of surprisingly cut open because they dominated the wider play.
Yeah, I mean, I say, you know, the breakaways, you know, within two passes, West Brom were in on goal, and it was very, very hard to work out why we were outnumbered, why we were stretched. And really, you know, West Brom have had three great chances to score goals and didn't take any of them and really let us off. And it was a mixture of poor finishing, bad marking. Monreal done great to clear one off the line.
Hasn't really got the pace, or has he, to get away from Koscielny? Still going. Looks to try and get the cross in and the header down. He's cleared off the line brilliantly. That's Nacho Monreal, who somehow manages to clear off the line from the downward header. I'm not quite sure who got the header in. It was Hal Robson-Kanu. How on earth did this one stay out?
Wonderful goal line clearance, but his whole all-round game for me was just a night where everything clicked. He was great at the back, great bringing the ball forward. I thought he had a cracking game.
Yeah, and I think in a way, him playing amongst the three centre-halves helps him because he's a clever player. He reads, you know, he reads the situation. He intercepts a lot. And it takes him away from the wide areas where, for me, his weakness is his pace. And if he's out wide and he's one-on-one against somebody with pace, he struggles. But you put him in the middle and he can read the game, he can intercept, and then he's clever with the ball when he breaks forward.
Key potential partnership that's growing for me is Alexis and Sayer Kolasinac. You've got Alexis in a forward role but peeling out wide. Kolasinac is the left wing back surging forward. And two or three times in the game, I felt their understanding was really, really promising for a kind of new relationship that's growing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Alexis has always done that when he's played on the left. He wants to come inside a lot on his right foot and put good balls in the box or get shots. But that encourages the left back. And whether it's been Monreal or Gibbs or Kolasinac now, they can get on and exploit those areas. It really works well. And then Sanchez can get on the ball and create stuff.
So Alexis, I think, really helping to get himself back on track and find his strides for the season to come. We also saw Mesut Ozil back for the final few minutes after a knee niggle, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's nice to get him on the pitch. You know, he didn't get a chance to really get involved in anything. But, you know, when he's there, he can make something out of nothing. And that's what we need. Not so much tonight, but when you play the big games, you need those kind of players. A little bit of magic from somewhere. And Sanchez offers you that, and Mesut Ozil can offer you that. And then you've got the option that brings Giroud on, who gives you someone big to attack the ball and make and create goals. So, you know, I say it's nice to see all these players back in now for all these games that are coming back fast and thick and fast.
Now, you mentioned games coming thick and fast. Obviously, Bartosz Borisov of intriguing challenge that they will provide us, I think, in the Europa League coming up 6 p.m. away on Thursday in Belarus. It will be, again, a switch of squad, won't it? And there is this squad potential to do that now, I feel, which is great.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's going to be tough. Those teams are going to love the fact Arsenal going there to play. They're going to be up for it. The fans are going to be up for it. They're going to make it a hostile sort of atmosphere. You know, we've got travelling to do. But, you know, for me, Arsenal's really got to play second string away from home and his strongest team at home. And I think that way keeps everyone fresh for the Premier League games, because playing Thursday and Sunday starts to take its toll as well.
Yeah, Sunday midday game, of course, against Brighton in the Premier League, which we'll talk about with Adrian Clarke a bit later in the show. On the back of obviously beating Doncaster in midweek, the likes of Jack Wilshere playing well in that game, young Ainsley Maitland-Niles getting a Premier League chance right at the death in this one. That wider group has got some talent, hasn't it, which is desperate to prove itself, or in Jack's case, reprove itself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Jack needs to prove himself because he, you know, he's a quality player and everyone knows what he can do. You know, he'll probably be desperate to be getting a starting place more often, and that was, you know, why he probably went out on loan in the first place, because he just gets frustrated sitting on the bench. So, you know, and he wants to probably get back in the England team. So, you know, he needs to be playing. But it, you know, when you've got all these quality players in the squad, you know, these other games are going to come in really handy, because Arsenal can use them in the Thursday night football, you know, the League Cup games, and it keeps everybody fresh.
So just finishing off, Martin, by looking slightly more broadly, Arsenal still with 100% record in all competitions at Emirates Stadium this season and back up now to seventh in the Premier League. Some nice momentum. Do you feel that the club has turned the corner? I think there is that feeling after a slightly iffy period just before the international break.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, it's tough to start the season. You know, it sometimes can take you half a dozen games to get you to get going. You know, out of the games that we've played Chelsea, we've played Liverpool. You know, tough games. You know, we've taken 1 point from those two. But you look at where we are now, and within the first six games, we've played those two already. Other sides have got to play each other. It's just the games tonight. These are the games we've got to be winning and taking the points. And we messed up against Stoke. But we should be beating sides here and really getting results more regular away from home.
Martin Hayes, former Arsenal winger, joining us here on the Arsenal Weekly podcast. It's been a pleasure spending time with you up on the gantry behind the microphone, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
No, thanks, Russell. It's been really good. And yeah, promising that good things are coming.
Ainsley Maitland-Niles was part of the England under-20s team that won the Junior World Cup this summer in brilliant fashion. He's been speaking to Arsenal media's Carl Finocchiaro about his memories of that very special tournament success.
Ainsley, welcome to the Arsenal Weekly podcast. How are you, mate?
Not too bad, yourself?
Yeah, decent. Good to catch up with you. We've known each other a while.
Yeah.
But now I know Ainsley Maitland-Niles, under-20 World Cup winner. That sounds pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's been a long, long road, but finally got there.
Is it one of those things where you achieve something, you look at it written down on Wikipedia or whatever, and you go, oh man, that's pretty cool. I can tick that off.
Yeah, but it sticks in your mind as well when you win it, you know. Keep having flashbacks and dreams about it. So yeah.
What are you dreaming about?
Just dreaming when the final whistle went, when I was on the pitch in the final, and just that feeling just keeps coming back to me. It'll never leave me. Never leave me.
I've never won an under-20 World Cup myself. Can you tell me what that feeling was like at the final whistle? Try and take us inside the moment, inside your mind, what you're thinking about.
It's hard for me to explain it to you because I just felt speechless at the time. Like, my body went weak and I just dropped to the floor and just had a prayer to God to thank him for bringing me this far. So it's hard to explain it to you. You have to be there to understand the feeling. But yeah, it was one in a lifetime moment.
You didn't go into the tournament as favourites, I think it's fair to say. Was that a good thing for you guys as a group, or is that not something that you even thought about?
We didn't think about it too much, but I think it takes the pressure off you when you're not the favourites, do you know what I mean? So, of course, we had a lot of room to make errors in the groups before we started to win games, but we won all our games, so I think, yeah, not being the favourites, it really gave us a lot of things to work for, and we took it.
Was this group kind of a chip on their shoulder kind of a group where, you know, you kind of wanted to prove that, you know, you weren't to be taken lightly, that you could be good at this level?
Yeah, we had something to prove because we got to the semi-finals in the under-19 Euros and we felt we should have won it. So we ended up playing Italy again. I think it was the semi-finals of the World Cup. So, yeah, we had a point to prove and we had to beat them because they beat us the year before.
So there's a bit of a grudge match out there in the semi.
Yeah, it was a bit of revenge, but it was all friendly.
Was it, honestly, I want the honest answer here. Did you think going into that tournament, when you hop on your plane, you're all together, did you think you could win it?
We had some thoughts, honestly. There was a few boys that said, like, look, we could actually win this. But I don't know if they was being serious. So, you know, a lot of people just say they're going to win it just to be positive and keep the team vibe high. But me personally, no, I didn't think we was going to win it.
When did you think, oh, hang on, this group is special, something special's happening, we could take this thing? What moment? And not the final whistle?
No, I think when we got to the quarterfinals, after that quarterfinal game, and then we drew Italy, everyone was looking at each other like, all right, we've come this far, we're not coming back to lose against Italy again. So if we get to the final, we definitely can't lose. So I think it was after the quarterfinals, before the draw of the semis.
And what was happening in the group? Can you describe the vibe between each other? Were you G'ing each other up? Was there one or two guys really vocal saying, come on, guys, we can do this? Like, what was the mood like?
Our group's more laid back, to be honest. So everyone was just doing their own thing and just preparing themselves mentally for games and off the pitch, staying in their rooms, relaxing, recovery time. So I think everyone was pretty professional about it.
Did you realise while you're out there that people were taking a lot of notice back home? Because, you know, I was over here, you know, and everyone, it was just gathering and gathering steam. Did you realise how much coverage it was getting?
Yeah, because Twitter was, it was really, really enthusiastic about the England under-20s at the time. So when I'd hop onto my phone in my free time, I'd see a lot of tweets, especially from Arsenal as well, and just saying how well we're doing. And that gives you a lot of confidence. So I'm sure all the boys got that from their clubs, and I think that helped us win it too.
The final was really tight. I watched the whole game. It was a nerve-shredding watch. I was obviously cheering for you guys, despite the fact that I'm not English. How nervy was it for you being out there actually playing?
Oh, it was... Oh, wow. I wouldn't be able to explain the nerves because... I didn't start the final, and to come on into a game with that sort of tempo in a final when if you know you make a mistake, you could end up costing your team, it's really hard to take. So just coming on, trying to keep it simple, and then when you're in the opposite's half, then try and do what you're good at. So it's just playing a careful game when you come on.
Were you nervous when you came on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't be. I think even the players that started were nervous too because it took a few minutes to get into the game, but, yeah.
Is that how it works, is it? Like, you're nervous and then you come on and then it just takes you a little while to find a rhythm and sink into the game?
Yeah, it takes you a couple of minutes to catch the tempo of the game as well, you know, because you're coming on and then you're just suddenly sprinting up and down the pitch trying to win the ball back for your team and trying to score as well. So it takes a bit out of you and then... About 5 or 10 minutes into that, that's when you start feeling comfortable, more relaxed on the ball.
There was a penalty save. That match did have kind of a bit of everything. I mean, how tense is that watching that moment? You know, your World Cup's on the line. There's a penalty. You know, what's going through your mind there?
At the time, it was like everyone was saying it wasn't a penalty. So we were just more angry at the fact that the referee gave the penalty and then for our keeper to go and save it as well, to keep us in the 1-0 lead. That was just, the whole bench just got up and everyone was shouting and screaming, hugging each other. Like, we won it already, so it was crazy.
England have waited a long time to be world champions at something. There was, football world champions, I better clarify that. The outpouring afterwards on social media and everything, I mean... What sense of pride does that give you to the fact that you did make such a big impact and you were history makers?
I think once you write your name in history, like, people always remember you. So just to be part of that team is something special. And it's just one of those things that you never forget.
Last one. Sorry, I interrupted you again. I've got a habit of that. Truthfully, what was the party like afterwards? Did you guys go out? Was it, let's just jump on a plane, get back to club duty? Like, come on, what happened after?
No, we went back to the hotel. Everyone's families were invited and we had dinner together. There's a bit of champagne going around. And then I think the team went out to the town centre after and just, I think we went for more food and I think we went to a bar after and just chilled. So it wasn't too crazy.
I was looking for some kind of crazy story.
No, sensible boys.
Yeah, just for the listeners, he's grinning from ear to ear right now, so I doubt he's telling the truth. Thank you very much for your time today, Angie.
Thank you.
The A.
Machami!
To Z.
Or Charlie George, who can hit him. Oh,
look, there he goes!
Bergkamp has found Pires. Pires towards Henry.
I is for Invincibles.
When I made the checkup with the team before the season started 2003-2004, I asked the players, why did we not win the championship last year? And they basically said, of course, in disguised words, it's your fault. I said, yes, why? And they said, because you put too much pressure on us. Because you said we want to win the championship without losing a game. And that was too much pressure. And I said to them, look, I just said that because I think you're capable.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
To do it.
When I saw my teammates being full of passion and adrenaline and still fighting and arguing, I thought, well, it's a really great team because they take care of each other and they have passion and they would like to or they want to win something.
You gotta believe in yourself. You gotta be confident. You gotta believe in what you can do. If you're not believing in yourself that you can perform and go out there and show everybody that you're the real deal, so you might as well stay at home. I collapsed in the second half against Chelsea and I felt like I didn't deliver. I wasn't happy. As you know, I didn't play against United in Birmingham. So I was even more upset. I was like, hey, like, this game is not going to go past me without me performing.
The performance for Thierry was out of this world, really.
I don't think the Liverpool defence knew what hit him. Jamie Carragher, people like that. He was absolutely unplayable that day, Thierry.
Thierry really just, you know, took the game with a scruff of his neck and literally just kind of wiped Liverpool out of the way.
This will always go down in history, winning the league at White Hart Lane 2-0-4, simple as that.
You can never get sick of hearing that, and I wish I could have stayed there and celebrated until now. Whenever I see that particular moment and that thing, it's just, you know, it goes without saying that was an amazing day.
When I am a manager and I look at the table of my team, I look always at the L and how big this number is, you know. When you can see L, zero, that's where you can be really, really happy.
The Invincibles reached the Champions League quarter-final that season after beating another eye Inter Milan in the group stages with one of the greatest European away performances of all time.
Here is Robert Pires. Cole has gone on. Henri has found him. Sharp challenge. Henri, sharp, 1-0. You've always got a chance when you've got Thierry Henri in your team. It's been heavy from Vieri. This is Henri. Jungberg, 2-1! Arsenal retake the lead with just 3 minutes of the second half gone. It's Freddie Jungberg scoring for the third game in a row. And Arsenal are again in sight of the result they need. It's not going to bother Arsenal because they've got Thierry Henry on the ball and Zanetti trying to catch up with him.
he steps inside, Pires is there. Henry will have to do it alone. Oh! Sensational goal from Thierry Henry to secure a sensational result for Arsenal. Henry slid into Freddie Jungberg. It'll come here for Edu. It's only 4-1 to Arsenal in the San Siro.
And it's another Henry assist. That's a good finish as well. That's brilliant.
He can hardly believe it. The 3,000 travelling Arsenal fans can hardly believe it, but you better believe it. Arsenal are back. Back as Champions League contenders.
Alier in pursuit.
He's got away from Brescia. They might not be finished. It's Jeremy Alier. It's Robert Pires. 5! They needed to win tonight, and they are winning with style and with bags and bags to spare, bags of skill.
I is also for Iwobi. Alex, an academy graduate who burst into the first team in the 2015 season, and boy, has he lit up Emirates Stadium ever since.
Iwobi's made a run and Bellerin spotted it. Away goes Alex Iwobi. Look at the far post. Mesut Ozil is there, still with Iwobi, who scores his first goal for Arsenal. The 19-year-old has doubled the Gunners' lead with a punishing counter-attack, and it's Everton 0, Arsenal 2. Here he comes again, clips it in, Iwobi! Yes! Arsenal are back in it! Alexis, was he tripped? Referee plays the advantage! And rightly so, because Alex Iwobi has capitalised and has scored his second goal of the week, and that gives Arsenal some daylight. It's Arsenal 3, Stoke 1.
The Chalkboard with Adrian Clark.
Well, joining me at the Chalkboard is Adrian Clark. Clarky, first things first, congratulations on being a new dad again.
Oh, thank you very much, Russ. Yeah, good news. Good news this week. Little baby Ted came along last Thursday, so very, very happy. And yeah, he's behaving himself nicely so far. So all good.
Well, the picture you sent me, he looks like a lovely little thing. So good work, and I hope it all continues to go well and calmly, as I'm sure it will in the Clark household.
Future Arsenal winger, Russ. Future Arsenal winger.
We shall see. That would be fantastic to have the next generation of Clarks tearing down the wing, as of one or two Arsenal players being at the moment. And chalkboard question for you, first of all, pal. Lacazette, great form. Monreal, outstanding, I felt, in the game on Monday night. Who would you say is Arsenal's most important player at the moment?
Oh, that's a good question. I would agree on those two guys, actually. I think Monreal was superb. He really was. He was faultless, I would say, against West Bromwich Albion. So well done to him. At the moment, I would say that Lacazette is probably the team's most important player. And I say that because we've got a run of winnable fixtures, games Arsenal would expect to score in and expect to take 3 points from. So and he's playing ever so well. Every time I watch him, Russ, I'm more impressed with Lacazette. I think his hold-up play, his touch, his movement, they're all excellent. And he sets the tone for the rest of the team. It so often happens in a football team when the striker is sharp, when the striker is working hard, especially when he goes to press opposition defenders, it triggers everybody else to do the same. And I think that's happening at the moment, and that's why we're seeing an upturn in form.
Yeah, it certainly is looking pretty positive, isn't it? And we move from there, Adrian, to a big game against Brighton, Premier League-wise, on Sunday at midday. And let's go with the midday factor, first of all, because as Arsene Wenger has said, it's not ideal, is it, on the back of having been in Belarusia on the Thursday?
Yeah, not great. But you just got to get on with it. It's the fixtures are what they are. Everybody always complains about the Europa League, the Thursday-Sunday aspect. But look, they won't do anything on Friday. They'll fly back, I'm sure, Thursday night. Coming very late on Friday. Saturday, light session, and then a home game. At least they're at home. That's what I'll say on this one. I haven't got to do any further travelling. And yeah, look, I don't think there are any excuses here. Rock up midday, Sunday, and beat Brighton. I think Arsenal are more than capable.
Now, Brighton have started pretty solidly, haven't they? We know what Chris Hughton is kind of about. He's a very honest manager and a very good one with a strong track record over the years. And his team kind of play a little bit like that on the whole, don't they?
Yeah, I like Chris Hughton. I think he's one of the nice guys in football management. And what I'll say about Brighton is that they're not very ambitious. You know, they don't flood the box with bodies. They work around set pieces a lot. Don't create bundles from open play. That's the negatives. But the big one, big fat positive, is that they don't give you goals. They really do not. They are hard to break down. Very disciplined. 4-4-1-1 will be the shape, and everybody knows their jobs inside out. The only team, well, there's two teams that have scored twice against them. That's Man City and Leicester. Everybody else has either got none or one so far. And so that tells you how difficult they are to break down.
Who will be one or two of your players that we should watch out for as Arsenal fans or as journalists heading into this one?
Well, I like Lewis Dunk. I think he's in terrific form. Shane Duffy is often the guy that's more heavily involved. He gets dragged here, down everywhere, makes a lot of tackles, sometimes makes mistakes. Dunk is fairly smooth. He's a really strong, powerful centre-half, and he needs to play well, obviously, against Alexander Lacazette. Yeah, I like him. And the other guy that started the season terrifically well is Solly March down the left-hand side. Not a player that I've been hugely familiar with in the past. I know he's had injury problems. But yeah, down that left-hand side, he delivers good crosses. He takes players on. He's decent. And they've got a newcomer that plays in just behind the main striker, Pascal Gross. Doesn't get in the box that much, but he's got a lot of skill, takes up some good positions. So those are the three standouts for me. I do think at the moment, not working brilliantly in central midfield. They've got a guy called David Proper. They've got Dale Stevens. Solid, but they're not offering a lot. They're not offering a great deal of creativity. So I think to survive this season, Brighton need a bit more from those guys.
Okay, so if you're Arsenal, as we've been discussing on the show already, rotation obviously needed for Thursday and then back again. Mm. In light of the team that's played against West Brom and won, do you tweak anything then for maybe facing the Seagulls?
Well, he's got luxury of having quality players available at the moment. No Mesut Ozil the other day, no Olivier Giroud, a number of others that he could have played didn't. It'll be fascinating. I think we'll see more changes for the Borisov game, and then we'll see probably the same 11 that played last time out against West Brom against Brighton. There might be Mesut Ozil coming in. That would probably be the one player I'd pick out. I've got to say, Mohamed Elneny did fantastically, I thought, especially in the second half. I thought he was excellent in central midfield. So it'd be fascinating to see whether Ramsey drops in for Elneny, whether Granit Xhaka gets a breather. So, yeah, selection headaches, I guess, for Arsene Wenger. But at the moment, thankfully, they're all good headaches to have. I think at the moment he's got a League 11, and the League 11 was pretty much what we saw against the Baggies.
And then Alex Iwobi, after a little niggle, hopefully back soon as well to seed into that mix where needed too.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. I think Alex Iwobi was quality against Chelsea. He offered the team a lot in terms of defensive work without the ball. And he's just such a good link player, Alex Iwobi. And I think in a game like this against Brighton, I don't know whether he's going to be available or not, but in that type of game, you need to pass through the lines quickly, shift the ball on one and two touch to break down Brighton before they've got themselves settled. If you're too slow against a team like Brighton, they'll plug all the gaps. You've got to be quick. And that's where Iwobi, I think, is a real asset. He turns in one touch, releases it in a second touch. And it's not always flashy, but it's very, very effective for the team.
And to round off this little part of our chat, very popular already on the podcast this season. If you were Arsene Wenger, Adrian Clarke, the gaffer, what is your 5-second team talk as you prepare to lead your players out against Brighton and Hove Albion?
Be patient, boys. You don't have to win this in the first 5 or 10 minutes. They might take some breaking down, but keep knocking on the door and the goals will come.
Clarke, loving your work there. Time to move on to, of course, our new quiz for this season, Brain of Arsenal.
Brain of Arsenal.
The Arsenal Weekly Podcast editor, Liam Roberts, joins us on the line. Liam, how's it going?
Morning, fellas. Yes, good, thanks. Just reapproaching Emirates Stadium. It was a late finish last night and I'm literally walking to the stadium now.
We like to work you hard, as you well know as much as anybody, Liam. Clarkey, of course, has had a pretty busy week himself, so we've been congratulating him on the new arrival and time we drew some battle lines up for our quiz, mate.
Yeah, so Clarkey, I hope you made some time for some revision. I know you must be prioritising at the moment, but surely there's time for revision.
Mrs. Clark has been working overtime. She's been working overtime so that I've spent, well, at least 3 hours revising John Lukic. So let's see how it goes.
Priorities. I like it. Okay, so Russell Hargreaves, it is your choice this week. Would you like to go first or second answering questions about Emirates Stadium?
I think, given the fact that Clarkey is in a weakened state due to the birth of a child and he's going for a three-peat on a tough subject, it would be harsh to make him go first, but I will.
It's all about the tactics.
Okay, Clarkey, right, hang on, just hold it there, Liam, just while I get Wikipedia up on my computer.
Oh, taking advantage of being out of studio. Boo.
No, I promise. I hereby make a pledge that I am not cheating. All right, let's go.
Mate, in all fairness, this week, Wikipedia might not help you. I've had to go deep for questions this week. Okay, so your four questions on week three for John Lukic starting now. How tall is John?
6'4".
Meters. Oh, 6'3".
No, it says 6'4" on Wikipedia. I revised that specially.
I had to look. It says 6'3", mate.
Well, I think that's a steward. That is a massive.
Well, after
steward,
last week's right? Danny Fisman controversy, where you didn't give me half a point, my heart doesn't bleed.
Okay, question number two. How many league goals did John concede in the 1988-89 title-winning season?
How many league goals did he concede? Goodness. I don't reckon that many. Twenty.
13. Not many at all.
Crikey.
Yeah.
Different times.
Yeah. Question three. Who did John keep his first clean sheet for Arsenal against?
These are just rock hard, aren't they? I haven't got a Scooby. I will go for Spurs.
Oh, it's Everton. And finally, question four: against which team did John make his second debut for Arsenal against? This was on Wikipedia.
Second debut. I haven't got that. Lazio.
It was Chelsea.
I didn't really have three hours revision.
As expected for week three, we're not going to hold that against you. And a new baby. So the excuses are in. It's okay.
Adrian Clark is the only person, we should say, to ever get a week three question right so far. He once got one, and that's the best any of us have managed.
Yes. So, Russ, week two, Emirates Stadium. You only need one to win. So, here comes your questions.
Okay.
What is the record attendance at Emirates Stadium?
60,161 as the official one, even though it's not quite the capacity due to a slight kind of spuriousness about season ticket allocations. But 61,61 is the highest ever officially recorded.
That's correct. Against Manchester United in November 2007. Question two, we're going to go through them anyway because you need to pick up the points. Can you name one band that have played at Emirates Stadium?
I can. Coldplay.
Correct, yeah. Of course, I've had Bruce Springsteen, Green Day, or Muse.
Of which that Capital Ball one is actually on a big poster as you walk in as well, handily.
Okay, he's showing up now. how many legends are there in the 8 murals on the exterior of the stadium?
It is 8 lots of 4, so 32.
Correct. And finally, for the full house,
easy.
What is the current field dimensions in metres?
I think it's 105 by 68.
Correct. Oh! 4 out of 4. It's a crushing, I'm afraid. It's a crushing.
I've got to say that they were kind week two questions. I've got Wikipedia up as we speak here. It says John Lukic, height 6'4", 1m93. I'm just saying.
Okay, wired 1m93 down as well. So I'll tell you what, Clarkie, I'll give you a point for that.
I think that's fair.
I'll give you a point.
Fair.
You never know. That might make all the difference at the end of the season.
Well done, Russ. Well played.
Thank you very much. We know it's all going to turn, though, as I try to potentially three-peat next week.
Yes. Yeah. So next week, Adrian, what are you changing your subject to?
Yeah, I'm going to change. Yeah, I anticipated that I would have to change. I'm going to go for one of the most memorable games I've ever gone to as an Arsenal fan. and that's the 2014 FA Cup final against Hull City. Unbelievable. Let's quiz on that one.
Okay, then. So we will be back next week for it will be week 3 of Emirates Stadium against the 2014 FA Cup final.
Brilliant stuff. Liam, thank you very much indeed. And Clarkey, our listeners around the world will be able to watch and hear us together. I believe you'll be up for the Brighton game.
Yeah. I'll be on the gantry alongside you for that Brighton game. Really, really looking forward to an early start. But hoping for another good home win.
The final word. Ball play through by Ashraf. Now here's an opportunity for Giroud. Can he get his first goal for Arsenal? The answer is yes. Finally it comes in his 7th appearance. He looks to the skies in delight, and that will take a weight off his shoulders and those of the players around him. Arsenal lead here at the Emirates.
Lovely move from the Gunners. Good football. Coquelin it was whose toe poked it through. He's got time to think there. The keeper's committed himself, but give Giroud some credit.
Well, that's full time on this week's show. Our thanks to Ainsley Maitland-Niles, to Adrian Clark and to Martin Hayes for their contributions today. If you'd like to know how we're doing on the podcast, so please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. You can subscribe as well and also find us these days on Acast. Remember to get your questions into Clarkey for the chalkboard on Twitter using the hashtag ArsenalWeekly. We're back on Monday the 2nd of October, and until then, it's bye for now.
The Arsenal Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.